Is it Ludi Apollinaris?
It is. Okay. Apollinaris.
Apollinaris. Io Ludi Apollinaris, Rhiannon.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time with Apollo.
You knew that was coming. Surely by this point, you knew that was coming. All right. Come in and know me better.
Not for this one.
You knew that was coming, though, as well. All right. That sounded really good. Let's get this podcast going. Yay!
Starting to feel sorry we're doing festivals.
Way too late for that. Way too late for that. Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Rhiannon Evans, Associate Professor in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University. This is episode CCXLIV, Ludi Apollinaris. Suffering from a mysterious ailment? Plague getting your people down? Perhaps a festival to Apollo is what you need. A simple festival with games, plays, and feastings could be enough to sway Apollo in your favour, or at least distract your city for a while. Here's Rhiannon Evans. Who is Apollo, and what business did he have being worshipped in Rome?
Apollo is the god of medicine and many other things. Medicine, I think, is going to really interest us, particularly today. But as many of our listeners will know, he's the god of archery, of poetry, of music. He is a god who is unusual in the Roman pantheon because he doesn't have an equivalent Greek name. He's known as Apollo in the Greek pantheon too. So some of what we're going to kind of tease apart today is why that might be. Because for every other god, you know them. You know that Jupiter is kind of syncretized, merged, as it were. The myths associated with Zeus get glommed onto Jupiter. Same for Juno, Greek Hera, Venus, Greek Aphrodite. You could go through the list. But Apollo is this weirdo who has the same name in both. So he's a little bit anomalous. He's a god who's significant to the Romans to a degree until the imperial period, where his star just starts to shine very brightly because Augustus takes him on as his patron god. We are going to be mostly looking at Apollo in the Republican period and thinking about how he fits in with Roman customs, rituals, structures in that period. So what was he before Augustus decided to make him big?
So when did he first start making his presence known in Rome? At what point was he a god that was becoming adopted by the people of Rome?
It's always hard to answer that question exactly, and it's probably earlier than this, but the first temple that we know of his in Rome is in about 432 BCE. Quite early, you know, in the 5th century. It's in the Circus Flaminius, which is in the kind of bottom half of the Campus Martius. So technically outside the city walls, outside the Pomerium rather, near the Tiber. And I feel like his temples are often something medical. You know, Tiber Island is almost entirely sort of a hospital and temples to Asclepius, who's another medical god. So maybe it's connected to that. His cult name is Medicus. We can all guess what that means. But that doesn't seem to have been an earlier name for the god. So it's not like he was Medicus and suddenly they discovered, oh, there's a Greek god. So let's introduce this Apollo name, as far as we know. The first temple seems to be built because of a plague, because of a widespread disease.
Okay.
So his earliest instance is very much associated with medicine.
Yeah, but there's a clear need for him then. It's not just a gradual introduction by the sounds of it. It's like we need the favor of this god.
Yes, but clearly he is known before that. This is just a crisis point at which he needs to be recognized in this formal way that involves both ritual and an architectural element.
Yes. It's
a cult place for him to live. Just a little bit later than that, in the early 4th century, in 397, the Romans start to offer a symbolic meal to him, again because of pestilence, because of disease. And this happens after consulting the Sibylline books. Now, we'll see this as a bit of a pattern. This is a series of books of oracles. And the Sibyl herself, well, sometimes there are lots of Sibyls, but this prophetess is very much associated with Apollo because I should have mentioned he's also the god of prophecy. Just as a little aside, the meal, the symbolic meal that is offered to a god is called the lectisternium, where You put up the three couches like you do in a normal Roman dining room, the triclinium. And then images of the gods, presumably statues, are put onto these beds as if they're dining.
Oh, that's creepy. Sorry, you lost me at that point.
I wasn't expecting that reaction. So Apollo, I guess, has pride of place at this one.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of cute.
Yeah, okay. So what point does this become so integrated that there is a festival, the Ludi Apollinaris?
This we can time to a whole century later, more than a century later. And it's during a big crisis in the Second Punic War, which is the war between the Romans and the Carthaginians led by Hannibal. This has been going since 218, but in 212, it seems like the Romans are rightly more concerned about this threat, because this is the time where he's rampaging around the Italian countryside. I mean, he's literally on the Italian peninsula. They have invaded Campania, right, the area around Naples. So this is a real threat to the Romans. And our historian, Livy, says at the beginning of book 25, "The longer the war dragged on and success and failure altered the situation, and quite as much so the attitude of men too, superstitious fears, in large part foreign at that, invaded the state to such a degree that either men or else gods suddenly seemed changed." So everything was going wrong. And Livy says, you know, something needed to be done about it.
It sounds like there's grasping around for a god who can help them, though.
Mm, exactly. Also a little bit like Livy doesn't really approve. He's just introduced a bit, in large part, foreign at that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and you know, there's a degree to which you could say, this is not an introduced god by this point. He's had a temple in Rome for hundreds of years.
Mm.
But maybe he's thinking more about what happens in terms of the prophetic books consulted at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans seem to be worried about threats to their institutions. They react to this in a way that we might not think obvious by having a book burning. And while they're doing this, the praetor Marcus Aemilius comes across a book of oracles by a seer called Marcius.
So just, sorry, pause on Marcius and back up to the book burning. So is this trying to suppress dangerous ideas during times of uncertainty?
Probably so.
Okay.
Yes.
And so foreign gods... And I'm using Livy's word there, sorry, foreign, fall under that.
Yeah, and we want to get rid of anything that might encourage what we would think of as conspiracies, superstitious thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of has the opposite effect, because the praetor reads two of them, and one of them foretells the defeat at Cannae, which had happened 4 years earlier in 216.
Okay, so this is a prophecy that had come true.
Yeah. The other book has a solution. And it says, and Livy again quotes this, this is in book 25, chapter 12, "Romans, if you wish to drive out the enemy from your land, the plague that came from faraway lands, I bid you vow to Apollo annual games. If you perform all this rightly, you shall ever rejoice and your power shall be dominant." Now, this is interesting because it combines the idea of a foreign army threat with that of a disease.
Mm.
It literally uses that metaphor with the word plague, which in Latin is vomicam. The W sound is pronounced by a V, so it looks like it's connected to our word vomit, which I looked up in my Oxford Latin Dictionary. I knew it meant something disease-ridden, but it literally means a gathering of pus, an abscess, or a boil.
Okay.
So they have to drive out the enemy who are the abscess or the boil from their land.
Interesting. The solution to your problems is a god working under the guise of a metaphor.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a medical god at that. And look, this is a frequent metaphor. I think it's the kind of thing we still use. This idea that your body has been infected if the foreign enemy is there. So you cut it off, this abscess.
Yeah.
What do you do? Well, you got to please Apollo, vow him annual games. Now, Marcus, the praetor, takes this to the Senate and they deliberate. And then they cross-check it with that other book of oracles, which is clearly more acceptable to them, the Sibylline books.
Right.
And it confirms it. It backs it up. Why have they not been looking at this before?
Mm.
They've had, you know, 4 years, 6 years.
I mean, it might have helped them with interpretation. My real kind of question is, why aren't they holding games to Mars?
To the god of war.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Mars, well, I mean, we could go down a whole rabbit hole here, but maybe we'll do a different podcast episode on Mars.
Mm.
In that he's someone they keep outside the city.
Okay.
They don't want him within the city. And again, Augustus will change this. He'll have a big temple of Mars right in the center of the city. But in this period, you kind of want to placate him out there somewhere. If you bring him into the city, that could mean civil discord.
Mm, okay. All right.
I think that's probably why, but, you know, I don't have a Roman here to ask.
So games to Apollo.
That'll just be my answer to everything, Matt. I don't know. No. The Romans are all dead.
Go ask a Roman.
Sorry, go on.
So games to Apollo.
Mm.
Sibylline Oracle's book says, yes, go ahead. So how do they go about planning this? What do we know about?
Well, we think that they were held probably on the 13th of July initially. We know it's July, and the 13th is the best guess for the original one because it's a bit tenuous, you might think, but it's where another set of games, the Ludi Plebeian Games, were held in November. So it's kind of middle of the month seems to be the time for games.
Yeah.
Over time, it gets extended back to the 6th, so it goes on for a number of days, a week. And Livy says, within the same section in Book 25, the people took part in them wearing wreaths of flowers. It sounds so, I don't know, rustic and lovely. The married women, of course they were at war, so not. The married women offered prayers. The doors to the houses were opened, meals were eaten in the open, and the day marked with every observance. It's a bit vague at the end there. Mm. But this is the height of summer, of course, so it's not surprising that everything's outdoors. And it seems like a big celebratory occasion. Of course, there are games as well.
The Ludi.
The Ludi, yes, the Ludi element. You get the Ludi Circenses, chariot races, and the Circus Maximus has long been established by this point. So we have these big entertainment of the chariot races. And then we also have Ludi Skyniki, which are probably the more Greek elements. They have mimes, dances, plays. So Skyniki is stuff that's on a stage. So you've kind of got that typical mix of what we think of as more of sport and also arts going on together.
But very Greek.
Yeah, in some ways. Plays, I guess you could say, we tend to think of as more of a Greek element.
But being a Greek god, would these kind of Greek ways of celebrating Apollo already be entrenched?
Well, that's very hard to say. So by the time Apollo is clearly a part of Roman ritual and society and he's got that temple there, it's hard to tell exactly where and when he came in from. So one theory is that he came in via the Etruscans.
Mm.
So remember the last...
Way back when.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we know he's there in the fairly early Republic. But some think that it's Tarquinius Superbus, so Tarquin the Proud, who brings him in right towards the end of the monarchy. Let me just find my notes. That's partly because of the connection to the Sibylline Oracles. Remember, Apollo, also the god of prophecy, and the Sibylline Oracles are intimately connected with setting up this set of rituals, these games. And Tarquin seems to have been associated with the Sibylline Oracles. The Etruscans knew Apollo as Aplu, and also the Tarquin family, the Tarquini, have a treasury at Delphi in Greece, which is a city really associated closely with Apollo.
Yeah.
So it does seem like there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that the Tarquini and the Etruscans were very involved with maybe bringing Apollo in or having an equivalent god who could easily be merged with that Greek god. It may be that they were the gateway to bringing Apollo to Rome, and he comes that early. And whether the Romans still think of him as Greek at this period is hard to say. You know, we don't know what the thinking was on that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Having theatre games, I mean, there are ludi that involve theatre. All of the theatrical performances are technically ludi even later. Games doesn't have to mean, you know, gladiators or horse racing or chariot racing.
Well, no.
It can mean all of these things together.
It seems just to encompass festivals. So
yes.
You have feasting, you have games. Those are just aspects of it. And you finish it all off with a sacrifice.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess this incorporates what we think of as the religious element, but it's all religious to the Romans. But yes, you finish off a gilded ox.
Golden horns.
Yeah. Golden. And two gilded white goats were offered to Apollo. And a gilded heifer to Latona, who is the mother of Apollo and Diana. This is kind of bringing together the other parts of Apollo's family as part of this festival.
So that's the first games, if we call it the inaugural games. So you hold this once, you deal with Hannibal. When do these games become something that are established?
Okay, well, you'd think it should be straight away because according to Livy, that prophecy said annual.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to have been absolutely an established part of the Roman calendar until 208. Then it's voted on by the Senate.
Mm.
And possibly, and Livy suggests this in a little later, book 27, that they seem to have been intended as a one-off in 212. So book 27, chapter 23, he says, the games of Apollo were first celebrated by Publius Cornelius Sulla, the city praetor, in the consulate of Quintus Fulvius Nappius Claudius. That's 212. Afterwards, all the city praetors in succession performed them, but they had originally vowed them for 1 year only and had fixed no day for their performance. So they seem to have continued, but they weren't at a particular time, which makes it a bit ad hoc, to use a Latin term. And the calendar is so important to the Romans. You know, the fact that it's put up there in public. You've seen the fasti carved on the stone.
Yeah.
And if the Ludi Apollinaris aren't there originally, then it's just a bit of, oh, we better hold something to Apollo. Things have gone wrong again. There's another plague or it's looking bad with Hannibal. But to have it fixed in the calendar makes it more significant to the Romans, makes it something that is going to be provided for. It must be funded.
Okay. So is it something initially that was more or less done as needed, a tragic event, a plague?
It seems that way. And I have to say, it kind of comes up in three successive books of Livy, but it doesn't all necessarily add up what he's saying about it. And of course, it's not the main drive of his narrative, which is concentrating on the war.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the suggestion that, yes, it seems like it's responding to a crisis. And then by 208, it becomes a fixed part of the calendar. Livy does suggest that it is, at least at one point in book 27, just continuing from what I just read, that it's the warding off of disease, not the crisis in the war, which was the major reason for the renewal of the game. So it might have been initially that was the spur. Hannibal is rampaging around. You know, we're really worried about Roman institutions. It's all going wrong. But he says that this year, and he's talking about 208 BCE here, a grievous pestilence attacked the city and the country. It showed itself, however, in protracted rather than fatal diseases. So it's just kind of ongoing chronic diseases, I guess. On account of this pestilence, supplication was performed in every street throughout the city. And Publius Licinius Varus, the city praetor, was ordered to propose to the people a law to the effect that a vow should be made to perform these games on a stated day forever. So it's, again, it's disease, this kind of recurrent, ongoing, never going away disease that makes the Romans think, right, we need to fix this. Both fix it to get it right, but also fix it in our calendar so that it is an established festival.
And it's quite an offering to Apollo to say, we are going to establish this in our calendar. Please deal with this damn plague situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, Livy has contradicted himself in the previous book, or contradicts himself here from what he has said in book 26, chapter 23. Such is the origin of the Apollinarian Games, which were instituted for the cause of victory and not, as is generally thought, in the interests of public health.
All right, so he's having it both ways.
Yeah, okay. I guess instituted for victory and then applied to ongoing pestilence.
Yes.
I just like saying the word pestilence because we don't get to say it enough now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, disease.
Either way, there's going to be a party.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so what does the initiation of these games and the continuation of them say about how, broadly speaking, Rome deals with religions and integrating them? Because this isn't the first time they've done it. It won't be the last time they've done it.
Apollo's not so much of a foreign god as some other gods that are brought into the city at a particular time. Like Isis or Cybele is a good example, the great mother, brought in at a particular kind of crisis. And we have an account in Livy of, you know, the statue being brought up the Tiber into Rome. With Apollo, it's a bit more gradual and a bit more complicated because of that. Is he Greek? Is he not? He's an interesting, complex god, I'd say.
Yeah, but as far as having a book burning and then turning around on the heel of that and holding the games, I feel like, you know, if there's a lot of worship of a god, if there's a lot of religious persuasion of a foreign god. You have the book burning to try and stamp it down. You have the games to try and integrate it and embrace it. Mm. And you go, okay, well, we're going to now make this ours.
Yes. I feel like in this instance, it's a desperate time. They try these games. It sort of has some effect. But what it actually signifies to me, or what it seems to indicate, the evidence we have from Livy, is that Apollo continues to be seen primarily as a medical god. Even though he says, some people think that it was because of disease that these festivals were initially brought in, he's kind of having to counter that idea because that is how Apollo is primarily seen.
Mm.
So he has to have this initial story of this is the crisis in the war against Hannibal. And then we find this in the books of Marcius, and it is some help. But the reason that the Romans go back to is a medical reason.
Yeah.
That Apollo continues to be seen in that guise until, I would say, until Octavian, as he is at the time, later Augustus, hooks on to him and claims to have seen a vision of him at the Battle of Actium, and then starts to associate him with victory again, very directly. I mean, he has a temple built at Actium for Apollo Nike, Apollo victorious.
Mm.
So he starts to bring the military element back into the worship of Apollo, but in a very personal way. Whereas here, it's about a god who protects the community, or at least if you propitiate him, he will take away the disease from a community. All right, none of these gods are particularly supportive. The ancient pantheon, they're not the kind of god we might think of as being charitable. You just need to make sure they're not really angry with you.
Mm.
And this is what these games do.
That was Rhiannon Evans, Associate Professor in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University. And you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any readily available podcatching platform. Tell your friends about the podcast. The more the merrier. You can like Emperors of Rome on our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Blue Sky. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon, I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. This podcast has been recorded and produced at the Bundoora campus of La Trobe University on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. So until the next episode, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.